indigenous populations lived all over the world pretty happily and in harmony with their environment for thousands and thousands of years before the invaders came.
We're unarmed and you're aiming your weapons at us. What kind of people are you?
Revolution in America.
There's no way we're giving up this piece of land. There's no way we're going to surrender for anybody.
Revolution in America.
There's no way we're giving up this piece of land.
In this part of the world, to take care of the land.
Revolution in America.
It could just escalate until everybody, children, women, everyone was going to be dead.
Revolution in America. Revolution in America.
On the night of February 27th, 200 members and supporters of the American Indian Movement took over the small village of Wounded Knee, South Dakota. In order to guarantee sufficient time to voice their demands, the Indians detained the proprietor of the general store, along with members of his family and six others who lived in the trading post complex. Almost immediately after having established their position in Wounded Knee, roads into the town were blocked, first by the American Indian Movement and the next day by U.S. Marshals. Initial reports during the first full day of the Wounded Knee action said that AIM was holding the 11 residents hostage, but during that first day, anyone living in Wounded Knee was free to leave, contrary to reports by the Justice Department, who originally claimed that AIM kidnapped Clyde Gildersleeve and his family. Gildersleeve, owner of the trading post, assured the Justice Department that residents were in safe Wounded Knee and could leave at any time, but chose to remain. This cleared the way for members of the American Indian Movement to make their demands. Initially, those demands were for the Senate to begin an immediate investigation of conditions on the Pine Ridge Reservation, a study of the treaty violations by the United States against Native American Indian tribes, and an investigation and reorganization of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, an agency of the Interior Department. South Dakota Democratic Senators McGovern and Aberesk were asked to come to Wounded Knee to convey these demands back to the Senate. Also during the first day, buildings in Wounded Knee were being fortified and trenches and foxholes were dug strategically around the 42-acre compound. 18 miles away in Pine Ridge, federal marshals were converting the BIA reservation headquarters into a fortress in anticipation of an attack by other Indians on the Pine Ridge. At first, 100 marshals were sent to South Dakota, but by the third day, more than 300 federal agents, including the FBI, had converged on State Highway 18 and the Bigfoot Trail leading into Wounded Knee. In the afternoon of the third day, McGovern and Aberesk arrived in Wounded Knee, where they met with AIM leaders and the Pine Ridge Civil Rights Organization. The Civil Rights Organization originally asked that AIM help them in their attempts to expose racial discrimination and other violations on the Pine Ridge Reservation. The two South Dakota senators said they would try to set up negotiations between Indians in Wounded Knee and federal officials in Washington. Following talks with McGovern and Aberesk and beginning with the fourth day of the Wounded Knee action, a ceasefire went into effect, but was short-lived when armored personnel carriers overran a bunker near what was referred to as the demilitarized zone. Also on the fourth day, the home of Aaron DeSursa was firebombed. DeSursa was a supporter of the American Indian Movement and published a newspaper on the reservation. He was strong in his opposition to Richard Wilson, and the Indians in Wounded Knee speculated that Wilson may have been somehow involved in the firebombing. Negotiations began on the fifth day in Wounded Knee between the Civil Rights Organization and Assistant U.S. Attorney Ralph Erickson. The meetings were held in a teepee near the Sacred Heart Catholic Church and were not productive. Erickson did not return for negotiations on the sixth day. Instead, he expressed the government's position, which AIM leaders said asked for a surrender. The Indians rejected Erickson's proposal on the seventh day. That agreement provided that Indians in Wounded Knee could leave immediately and not be arrested, but would be subject to indictments by a grand jury being formed in Sioux Falls. By the eighth day, both the government and AIM leaders were rigid in their requirements for a settlement, and meetings outside Wounded Knee between AIM leaders and the Justice Department brought no results. Richard Wilson, in the meantime, proposed his own solution when he announced that he would muster a 900-man army and take Wounded Knee back. On March 7th, U.S. Attorney Erickson said the situation was nothing more than intolerable blackmail and set a deadline of 5 p.m. March 8th for people to leave Wounded Knee. Additional federal marshals were brought in and more armored personnel carriers were stationed on the hillsides over Wounded Knee. The Indians there re-emphasized the minimum demands and stated that they were prepared to die. By this time, there were more than 400 people in Wounded Knee. Dennis Banks, a national director with AIM, reaffirmed its stance in negotiations.
This government is at our mercy. We also know that this government is on its hands and knees. The ultimatum was given to them again to negotiate or massacre. They cut off the negotiations and were left with only one alternative, and that was to come in and massacre. They have chosen not to massacre. At this point. They admit they have no answer. They admit for the first time that this government has been wrong. And so, in our attempt, again, we will make the first move to defuse the situation. We made it last night, as a matter of fact. Some of you don't know. We were fired upon by FBI agents. We did not return any fire. And we will not return any fire again tonight. However, if any of our people are killed because of our dedication to defuse this issue, we can guarantee no safety for any FBI agent that fires upon us. It'll be up to this government to begin action towards correcting problems on this reservation and on other reservations. In the meantime, we remain at Wounded Knee.
Before that 5 p.m. deadline and during the 10th day, 34 women and children left the village, but many more women joined men in the trenches, waiting for sunset and the federal government's ultimatum. At the last minute, a ceasefire was called, but lasted only a short time after federal agents shot and wounded two Indians. An emergency hospital had been set up earlier in the week, and the two men were brought there, where AIM spiritual advisor and medicine man Leonard Crowdog treated the bullet wounds. On the 11th day, attempts to revive the negotiations were unsuccessful, and Erickson returned to Washington. Meanwhile, attorney William Kunstler and Carter Camp, a national director of AIM, expressed optimism that some progress had been made, but reaffirmed their position.
There's been some talk on the peripheral matters, but no agreement on the substantial issues that brought us to Wounded Knee in the first place. And that's a tremendous concern to us, because there can be no changing of the status quo until those issues are dealt with.
We hope to have another meeting at 3 o'clock today, if the government is willing, probably in Pine Ridge, and try to elaborate there the essential issues that Carter and I have both discussed, and try to put the horse in front of the cart rather than the cart in front of the horse, because all the negotiations thus far have been essentially on what happens after the substantial issues that Carter spoke about have been resolved. How you leave Wounded Knee, whether you lay your arms down or you don't, whether you're transported 150 miles away or what have you. But that should come after they reach some sort of agreement on why they came here in the first place.
Our position when we came here was to help the Oglala Sioux Civil Rights Committee and the Oglala Sioux people in their fight. And we're going to keep our same posture, our same position until those things are done. Now, the government so far hasn't met with us, with anyone except for people from the Justice Department. Those people are law enforcement people. You know, we don't want to meet with those. We want to meet with the Department of the Interior or the White House, those people that have the authority to deal with Indian problems and deal with Indian problems on a daily basis. We're not going to be put in the same position as Bigfoot and his band were in 1890 when they were massacred because they put down their arms. We're going to maintain a position of strength, and we've always said that. We'll meet the government either, you know, in a fight in the trenches, or else we'll meet them at the negotiating table when they can deal on the issues of the Oglala Sioux tribe. Either one, you know, hasn't been changed. We're still in the same position. We can meet the might of the United States with violence, or we can meet them when they decide to deal with the people on the issues that brought us here in the first place, but those are the only two meetings we're going to have.
A surprise move came late Saturday during the 12th day of the action when the Justice Department announced that they were removing roadblocks. Federal marshals were pulled back and sent to nearby Rapid City where they were put on standby. Shortly after the announcement, people in Wounded Knee were joined by 300 or so supporters from the reservation, and a victory celebration was held near the massacre site. More than 700 people participated in the ceremony in which AIM leaders and a number of traditional tribal chiefs asked that all Indian people follow the ways of the Indian culture and abolish the white man's religion and teachings. Many of the tribal chiefs stayed on through Sunday when they held a meeting to discuss plans for Wounded Knee. The chiefs are selected in traditional ways, and there are altogether 8 of them on the Pine Ridge Reservation. 6 of them met in the teepee in Wounded Knee and issued this statement.
Let it be known this day, March 11th, 1973. First motion stated that the Oglala Sioux people will use this document to revive the Treaty of 1868, and that it will be the basis for all negotiations. Second motion, that the declaration be made that we are a sovereign nation by the Treaty of 1868. Third motion, to send a delegation to the United Nations as follows. Chief Frank Fullscrow, Chief Frank Kill's enemy, Eugene Whitehawk, District Chairman, Meredith Quinn, International Legal Advisor, Matthew King, Interpreter, David Long, Vice President of the Oglala Sioux Tribe under the Indian Reorganization Act as an alternate. Seconded and voted unanimously. Fourth motion was that as soon as they get the petition together, they want to abolish the tribal government under the Indian Reorganization Act. Also, that Wounded Knee will be a corporate state of the Oglala Sioux Nation. Seconded and voted unanimously. 5. A Sioux medicine man requested that an interpreter accompany the delegation to the United States and not United Nations. Seconded and voted unanimously. And signed by Frank Fullscrow, Frank Kill's enemy, Eugene Whitehawk, Meredith Quinn, David Long, Matthew King. In proclaiming the independent Oglala Nation, the first nation to be called upon for support and recognition is the Six Nations Confederacy. Dignitaries of the new independent Oglala Nation request that the Confederacy of the Iroquois send emissaries to this newly proclaimed nation immediately to receive firsthand all the facts pertaining to this act. They will be duly received as dignitaries of the Confederacy of the Iroquois.
The Six Nation Iroquois Confederacy is recognized by the United States as a sovereign nation and travels under its own passport and has never observed the border between the U.S. and Canada. The basis on which the independent Oglala Nation declared its sovereignty is explained by Meredith Quinn, a legal advisor.
First of all, my grandma said I would live to see the day when we would come into our own, and this is that thing. Sovereignty is like any other country. It has the right to an army, a navy, an air force. It has the right to citizenship, health, education, welfare. It has all the rights to a functioning type of a government. That the Sioux possess the strongest sovereignty treaties in this country. Second is, of course, the Pueblos of New Mexico. But this little act today in establishing sovereignty, such as citizenship, borderline, the mechanism of a functioning government, which will take place and is being formulated, as the corporate state of Wounded Knee takes in the membership of other areas, or what we call districts, they in turn will become states of the corporate state of Wounded Knee. Citizenship, passport, the rights of a nation. Because as Indian, and this we should be proud of this fact, that according to international law, we are the only non-white in the world that has the right to belong to the civilized nations of the world. And we're going to do just that thing. Thank you.
The effect of the tribal chief's decision to declare independence altered AIM's role slightly. Russell Means, National AIM Director, explains their new position.
Now the Oglala's leadership has asked that the American Indian Movement form the first army of the independent Oglala Nation. We have already dispatched three ambassadors to the United Nations. They are now en route to New York City to present our Declaration of Independence. And we are asking that the United States government secede from the Oglala Nation and get the hell out of here. From here further, if any spy from the United States of America is found within our borders, he will be dealt with as any spy in a time of war and be shot before a firing squad. We are asking all concerned countries of the world to come to the aid of the Oglala Independent Nation in terms of supplies, in terms of establishing treaty relationships and diplomatic relationships, and also to come to our military aid.
Our mother, our father, the earth, and the sun.
The first country that we are asking to come to the aid of the independent Oglala Nation is the Six Nations Iroquois Confederacy. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to become refugees of the independent Oglala Nation, then I suggest you begin leaving now. But if you want to become a citizen of the independent Oglala Nation, you're welcome to remain here. Don't mean no harm.
Shortly after the Declaration of Independence was announced, an AIM patrol vehicle was halted by FBI agents, and they attempted to make arrests. According to AIM members who were on the patrol, federal agents fired into the rear window of the van, injuring one of the Indians. They returned the fire and wounded an FBI agent slightly, hitting him in the wrist. The patrol vehicle then drove off, and a helicopter was sent from Pine Ridge to take the agent to the hospital. After this incident, roadblocks were once again set up by federal marshals, and the government announced its strategy to starve the Indians out. The 14th day in Wounded Knee was spent in formation of the provisional government and in improving living conditions for the 400 people there. Up to this point, most people were sleeping in one of the three churches in Wounded Knee or in the trading post. As local residents ran out of heating fuel, it became necessary to house them in other buildings. Partitions were constructed, dividing the Quonset-like building to accommodate about 50 people. Some older, unoccupied buildings around the village were also renovated to provide housing. The provisional government of the independent Oglala Nation included members of the American Indian Movement, along with the traditional chiefs and officers of the Pine Ridge Civil Rights Organization. The provisional government offered citizenship to people in Wounded Knee, and altogether, 406 women and men affirmed allegiance to the ION. In the first general meeting of the new nation, Russell Means talked about the strength of their position because of the treaties.
For 2 weeks, we've known that the United States government can come in and squash it militarily. We never said that we could beat them, overthrow them. But the fact, here's the fact, that if they, no matter if they come in or not, no matter whether they massacre us or not, they still are going to have to answer to our treaty rights. Now, they're really messing around with a lot of treaties if they come in here, because all these Indian people from Canada and across the nation all have their own separate treaties. So no matter what happens, whether we live or die, they're going to have to answer to our treaty rights. Not only to this country, and not only to the Indian people of America, but to all the countries of the world. One other thing, if you choose to leave this country, we're not going to allow you to enter the United States of America with weapons or ammunition, because that's already violent enough over there.
By now, there were Indians representing 64 North American tribes and a few Chicanos and non-Indians. The provisional government census revealed 183 Oglalas, 189 other Indians, and 34 non-Indians. This is in contradiction to statements made by both the Justice Department and Richard Wilson, who claimed that most of the inhabitants of Wounded Knee were white radicals. Also during the 14th day, a grand jury was begun in Sioux Falls to investigate the events of Wounded Knee. Shortly after noon on the 15th day, Assistant U.S. Attorney Harlington Wood arrived from Washington to set up negotiations once again. He was accompanied by the National Council of Churches representative, John Adams. The two were met at the ION checkpoint by leaders of the provisional government and walked the quarter mile from the border to the AIM headquarters. The meeting with Wood lasted for nearly 2 hours, at which time Russell Means held a news conference to explain what happened.
They have no answers for us now through negotiations, because they don't know how to deal with our treaties. But if they massacred us, they still wouldn't have any answers. So the point now is whether they're going to deal with the original issue from the very beginning since we've been here, and that's with the Department of Interior. And that will be on neutral ground. So with their agreement again, you know, that they're going to cease fire. See, last night, they fired on us. We didn't return no fire, so there's no statements to the press stating the Indians fired on us. So we returned the fire. The press isn't even aware that there was any firing going on last night. And so the world won't know it until when we fire back at them, and the government comes out with a press release that we fired first, so they return the fire. That's their game. As long as they can just fire on us with no response, they're going to keep it quiet. So that, you know, that's who we're dealing with, really. So, tomorrow or tonight, we're going to begin to find out whether we're going to be meeting with the high officials. This guy seems to be, he's one of them guys that can really trick you. Pat you on the back. At the same time, you're getting this knife ready. The kind of negotiator we're dealing with now. The other ones we knew where they were at. They were just out and out pigs. This guy is a sneaky pig.
Banks restated the minimum demands for negotiation and clarified the role of the American Indian Movement in the Wounded Knee action.
We are sticking to our original position, one that states we will not leave here until there is the unilateral firing of Wyman Babby as the area director. Point number one. Number two, we would still not leave here until there was also the firing of Stanley Lyman as the Pine Ridge superintendent, the BIA. Third, that we would still not leave here until one, two are taken care of, and also until the government suspends its hostile activity against us through the financial supporting of its puppet government here on the Pine Ridge, and also through the puppet regime of President Wilson. We are sticking by to those requests that the Oglala Civil Rights Organization brought us in here. They have agreed that more study was needed following the weekend that just passed. They've also understand more fully now our position that we're not leaving here until those demands are met. We will continue to stick by those demands until we are otherwise directed by either the new Oglala Sioux Nation, the independent state, or by the Civil Rights Organization. During the meeting, it was suggested that if the high interior officials agreed to a meeting, would we agree also to a neutral place to meet? They don't want to meet in the armed camp at Wounded Knee, and we don't care to meet in the armed camp at Pine Ridge. So the possibility exists of meeting in a neutral ground. We have suggested that the United Nations is the only neutral ground where we will meet with anybody else. If they guarantee us safe passage there and back, in the same manner that we guaranteed him safe passage in here and back out to his people. He was positive that this kind of agreement could be reached. That was the bulk of the discussion. There was no agreement reached inside there except the fact that we are going to re-enter into some dialogue. We are re-entering into a discussion which will defuse the explosive situation here at Wounded Knee. Not to disarm any of us. We've made it clear we will not lay down any of our arms, because we know they will never lay down their arms. There will be an attempt to defuse the situation. It's a principle of life and death for all the Indian people that are here today. We will remain to those convictions. The government sees now that we are going to stay here until all of those demands are met. That we are going to stay here until situations that they're supporting this puppet government is corrected. They have finally seen the fact that a lot of abuse is going on in the village of Pine Ridge. They finally recognize the fact that six council members, or six districts rather, out of the eight, have withdrawn from that puppet government. They recognize that now. And now they have agreed that the complaints that we have issued on behalf of the Civil Rights Organization of Pine Ridge are legitimate.
That was Dennis Banks discussing negotiations with Deputy U.S. Attorney Harlington Wood. On March 14th, the federal grand jury in Sioux Falls turned over 31 sealed indictments charging 13 people with burglary, arson, and grand larceny. The grand jury heard testimony from the Gildersleeves to determine if kidnapping charges should be brought against AIM leaders. The government said no such indictments were made. Later that evening, reports came into the trading post that federal agents were moving closer to Wounded Knee and that armored personnel carriers were within 400 yards of the ION checkpoint. This is a telephone conversation between Russell Means and the Justice Department concerning those APCs.
There's four or five APCs on the highway within 400 yards of our checkpoint. That's a clear violation. There are also APCs on the northwest side and on the side of us, and it appears to our military people that they're trying to flank that checkpoint. Now, if those vehicles aren't moved back soon, then we have no alternative and no recourse but to force them back. The main road and those ones trying to flank us. Now, they have to be moved back or else, and off of that flank, our military people, well, we just can't accept that type of a...
The following night, a lone AIM sentry was fired upon by federal agents, and when other AIM warriors joined him, a battle typical of the skirmishes at Wounded Knee began. Here is a recording of that firefight.
Yeah.
During the firefight, a Chicano medic from the emergency hospital was wounded. He was hit in the abdomen and taken to the hospital where Crow Dog removed the bullet. Tom Cole, who recorded this firefight, talked with the Ames sentry who was first fired upon by the FBI. He told Tom that agents were definitely using tracer bullets to track in on him, and they were serious to make a kill. The shots were fired from APCs about 600 yards from the AIM bunker. Federal agents used image-intensifying starlight scopes and tracer bullets to see in the dark. In addition, pop-up flares are used throughout the night to light the area around Wounded Knee. Many grass fires have resulted from use of the flares, and more than 100 acres of rangeland has been destroyed.
Where the fuck's it at, man?
It's out there.
Fucking the
243
there with no wet ammo shit. I'm doing this good, blowing around, man. There's no ammo, motherfucker.
I never knew pride and I never knew dignity. I never lived truth, cause I've only lived insanity, humanity, insanity. This is what you done to me, this is what you do to me. So now it's like the liberty. This is the reality the God has gave. From the slayer to the slave and the cradle to the grave. A world with no windows and a world with no mirrors. A world with no doors and a world with no tears. No mother since my birth, cause I never touched the earth. And I never touched the sky, cause I never knew why. See, I never knew the moon, I never knew the sun. I never knew humanity and nature all one. Cause I never lived the circle, see, I've only lived the square. I've only lived the square, cause they taught me not to care. You know, think for yourself, put compassion on the shelf. Compete until you die and defeat to get by. See, I never knew the question, all the things that I was taught. I never realized the falseness of their plot. From the slayer to the slave and the cradle to the grave. The direction of my path that I've not been saved. I was saved by my roots, just my true culture. I saw through the lies of that Western vulture. The Western culture and all its inhumanity ravages the earth as it perpetrates insanity. Humanity, insanity. This is what you done to me. This is what you do to me. So now it's not a liberty.
There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
In the spirit of flower,
we choose the way of Earth.
In the spirit of Zapata and in the spirit of crazy horse. To your mother, all my sisters and brothers, a sagrada donna, seeing the sacred earth mother, but she's only half alive, she's only half alive, but we needed to survive, we needed to survive, but we lost all our connection to the circle and the sacred four directions, the sacred 4D and its manifestations, reveals all material and all its creation, from the mother to the earth, to the sky, to the father, to the earth, to the air, to the fire, to the water, to the north, to the south, to the east, to the west, when we used to live in harmony, we used to live the best. We used to give and take, we used to take and give. We used to be in balance, that's how we used to live. This is sacred circle, this is our connection. Our mother is sick and she's cut up all sections. How it was and how it shall be. Unless we understand this, we will never be free. We will never be free unless we live in harmony. We will never be free unless we realize prophecy. Is our son's destiny. Destiny is our son, cause our son holds a key. Our son holds a key for our people to be free. Our son holds a key for the world to see that our son will save the world eventually. 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 And a slow will save the world eventually. And a slow will save the world eventually. And a slow will save the world eventually. Oh, me talk to you, all my relations.
Because they can't break our spirit.
We'll be the first to kill off the world.
What's that thing?
See, all you do is make noise. Unless you can get 100 yards close to that fucking, you're gonna be shit.
On Saturday, March 17th, Harlington Wood returned to Wounded Knee and presented the government's final proposal. No details of that proposal were made available until the following day. AIM leader Dennis Banks said the proposal was ridiculous and on Sunday burned it during a general meeting of the independent Oglala Nation. The government's position stated that seven people would be transported from Wounded Knee to a hotel in Sioux Falls for a 3 to 5 hour negotiation session with the Interior Department and the Justice Department. The meeting would be preceded and followed by a 1 hour news conference. At the end of the final news conference, AIM negotiators could be arrested if there were warrants outstanding. Simultaneous with the beginning of the negotiations in Sioux Falls, inhabitants of Wounded Knee were to walk out, stack arms, and be arrested. AIM said the government's proposal called for a surrender, something that they would never agree to. On the 25th of March, Carter Camp announced that there could be a settlement within 72 hours if the federal government would cooperate by sending high government officials instead of, in his words, flunkies like Harlington Wood. He said that it is the Indians' treaty right to deal directly with the White House.
We feel that this position has so solidified amongst the Indian people here that there's no way that we'll ever change our stance here. We also feel that the federal government will never be able to grasp the fact that it is legally our right to have an independent nation within the boundaries of the USA, and that they will possibly tonight start an armed invasion of our nation. And at that time, you know, we know that they have the armed force strength, they have the might to overwhelm our tiny nation. All the American Indian Movement people here and the Oglala Sioux people that are here defending this nation have decided that we'll never leave and that we'll fight here to the last man. And we feel that it's incumbent upon all the people of this country to rally themselves to the issue of freedom of a people and try to stop their own government from committing another reoccurrence of the 1890 massacre of Indian people. We think that if the support comes with each person supporting us in his own particular way, that our nation will be able to stand strong, and then eventually our people will, all over this United States, win the freedom that they've been fighting for so long.
Meanwhile, in Pine Ridge, Richard Wilson directed the tribal court to issue an order removing all National Council of Churches people from the reservation. The NCC had been on the reservation for 2 weeks acting as official observers, and Wilson claimed that they were aiding and abetting the enemy. The court order also provided that all non-Oglalas had no right on the reservation, and people were immediately served with the order as they came onto the Pine Ridge. Reservation police arrested two women reporters under that order. They were both accredited members of the American Indian Press Association. Also on the 21st day of the Wounded Knee action, the leader of the Six Nation Iroquois Confederacy issued a statement appealing to the people of the United States and the rest of the world to support the struggle. Sporadic fire was reported by federal officials during the night. One of the national directors of AIM, Vernon Balacourt, was interviewed at the United Nations on Thursday, March 22nd. He was there to continue the international contacts with the people at Wounded Knee that they have been making in an attempt to gain world support for the movement. He described the situation as very grave. He said, "We are ready to lay down our lives, not for ourselves, but for our grandchildren, our unborn." Federal officials reported heavier gunfire on the night of March 22nd. The phone lines out of Wounded Knee were cut, and that situation continues. There are no food and medical supplies getting in, and there's a desperate need of food and medical supplies at this time. Then on Sunday, March 25th, Federal Judge Bogue issued a temporary restraining order against the U.S. government blockade. The order said that food, medical supplies, and heating fuel must be allowed in. The order was won by AIM attorneys Mark Lane, Ramon Rubidoux, and William Kunstler. The charred body of a man believed to be Leo Wilcox was found in a burned car 30 miles from Wounded Knee near Scenic, South Dakota. Wilcox was a supporter of Dick Wilson and a member of the Tribal Council of the BIA. Police have not said if the death was accidental. Local residents say the fire was caused by a broken gas line on the car. The same afternoon, Wilson and his supporters, described by some on the reservation as a goon squad, set up their armed roadblocks in defiance of the court order outside Wounded Knee. No attorneys, reporters, or supplies could be allowed in. Wilson said he asked for more arms from local chapters of the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the American Legion. The Senate Interior Subcommittee began closed-door hearings on what its chairman said would cover the actions at Wounded Knee and other protests around the country by Native Americans. Monday night, a federal marshal was shot and seriously wounded at one of the federal roadblocks. He was flown to Denver for hospitalization. Federal officials maintained that the shots came from inside Wounded Knee, and an Indian woman who was inside the village at the same time disputed this, saying those Indians shot a cow for food, heavy firing erupted from federal marshals, and that there was no chance for Native Americans to fire out towards the blockade as they had to seek cover. Then on Tuesday, March 27th, the federal officials near Wounded Knee and Dick Wilson alleged that a split had taken place within the leadership. There were also reports that AIM leaders Dennis Banks and Russell Means had left Wounded Knee. Senator Aberesk of South Dakota went so far as to say that a settlement would be immediately forthcoming. He said leadership had been taken over by local Oglalas from the Civil Rights Organization, and he also said that those inside Wounded Knee would come out and surrender their arms and give names to federal authorities. Aaron DeSursa from the Civil Rights Organization made several statements on Tuesday which indicated that he was now negotiating on AIM's behalf, and the senator said his information came from DeSursa. The Justice Department also published a new list of accredited reporters, prohibiting all reporters from the underground press and most non-network news people from entering the village. Assistant U.S. Attorney General Kent Frizzle held a news conference Tuesday night. He too said that Banks and Means had left the village. He alleged that they left on Monday night, but returned Tuesday night. He said the local civil rights organization, which is the group which asked AIM to come to Wounded Knee in the first place, had taken over leadership, but when Banks and Means returned, leadership was taken back at gunpoint by AIM members. AIM attorney Ramon Rubidoux discounted these reports, as have representatives of both the AIM leadership and the civil rights organization. All say they are absolutely not true and indicate an attempt by the federal government to divide and conquer. Aaron DeSursa also denied there was a split, although he continued to hold separate discussions with federal officials. Negotiations were supposed to resume on Wednesday, but did not. At a meeting with federal officials, Attorney Rubidoux said no negotiations would take place outside Wounded Knee. Up to this point, it is clear that the Native Americans at Wounded Knee are maintaining the position that negotiations will not be meaningful unless the 1868 treaty and sovereignty of the independent Oglala Nation are included. Reporters were able to get into Wounded Knee today, as were attorneys. At the time of this broadcast, and as it is in progress on March 29th, we have this report from Unicorn News Service and the Wounded Knee Information Collective.
Thursday morning, many of the major news media were reporting an armed conflict inside Wounded Knee between AIM leaders and Oglala Sioux members of the Civil Rights Organization, led by Pedro Bissonnette. To verify this story, we talked with Mark Lane, one of the lawyers who was allowed into Wounded Knee yesterday and was there at the time these events were supposed to have taken place.
I was there yesterday, and incredibly enough, in the midst of this violent mutiny and riot, I didn't notice a thing going on except a very peaceful, calm community of men, women, and children. In fact, because we arrived, six lawyers, to meet with the leadership, a special meeting was arranged. And there were no members of the press at all in Wounded Knee because they're not allowed in anymore by order of the Department of Justice. Therefore, it's a little bit difficult for me to understand where the information about what is taking place in there comes from. But we were at a meeting. It was opened by Russell Means, who the media informed us had fled and was probably in Cuba with $6,000. Later, Dennis Banks participated in the meeting. He was there too, although we had been informed by the senator of the state that he had fled and he was out of the country. And I asked Means and Banks what they were doing there, since I heard they were in a different country, and Means smiled and said, "We are in a different country. This is the Oglala Sioux Nation." The meeting was chaired by Russell Means, who began by saying, "Recently, in the reorganization here, the leadership has been assumed after discussion by the Oglala Sioux Nation and by the representatives here, the Oglala Community Council. The chairman of that community council is Pedro Bissonnette." And Pedro Bissonnette then chaired the rest of the meeting. Russell Means, to a very large extent, Dennis Banks, to a certain extent, Carter Camp, to a certain extent, Vern Benincourt, to a certain extent, all played active roles in the meeting. The meeting was devoted to discussing the latest proposal by the Department of Justice for some kind of negotiation. And I just heard the local senator here say that because these people are out of power, there's now a chance for a negotiation. The fact is that Means was the first one to say it is important that there be negotiation.
"For the past 4 days, despite a temporary restraining order demanding it, no food or medical supplies have gotten into Wounded Knee. Yesterday was the first day lawyers were permitted inside. Despite the fact that there are several hundred law enforcement officials including the federal marshals, Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Bureau of Indian Affairs Police, and the National Guard in the Pine Ridge Wounded Knee area, they don't seem to be able to enforce the temporary restraining order against the 20 or so vigilantes manning Wilson's roadblocks. Today, the supporters of the people of Wounded Knee drew up a petition addressed to President Nixon, informing him of the situation. They accused the Justice Department, the Department of the Interior, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs of disobeying the temporary restraining order by, quote, permitting and encouraging the vigilantes to erect the roadblocks, obstructing the entrance to Wounded Knee, unquote. It demanded that, quote, you enforce the laws and treaties of the United States equally and justly, and direct the Justice Department to ensure that the people of Wounded Knee are permitted to receive food and medicine, end of quote. We also talked with Vernon Bellecourt, a national coordinator of the American Indian Movement.
And I attended a meeting yesterday with Senators Averesk and Marvin Franklin from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and of course with various members of the Ogallala Community Council and members of the Rapid City community and American Indian Movement members concerned with the issue at Wounded Knee. And we would like to point out very emphatically that contrary to press reports that have continued to try to indicate that there was a split within the leadership of Wounded Knee, this is completely unfounded information, distorted by various people who are not in contact with the leadership within Wounded Knee, and it is totally inaccurate. I happen to know I have that direct line and communications into Wounded Knee, and everybody is together, and the people are very much standing together. We have to be very concerned with the type of distortion that apparently has arisen out of the Justice Department and their efforts to cause division, not only within Wounded Knee, but division across the country of those people who have stood in full support of the Ogallala people and the American Indian Movement in the Wounded Knee situation. We find that today, I have just come across the country myself, we find that we've got massive support from all people of conscience in this country. We've got the white brothers, black, yellow, every color of mankind from every walk of life have stood with us on the issue of Wounded Knee. The Justice Department, in recognizing this strong solidarity, has made every effort to distort and to try to indicate that there is a division and a breakdown within leadership within Wounded Knee. This is totally inaccurate, and we have to condemn the Justice Department and the United States government for its efforts to try to bring about disunity amongst all the supporters of Wounded Knee.
You live, 'cause
alive. A country of color can't barely survive. No hot running water or food on their plates. Marginal existence is a constant state. But it's not because they can't. You see, they're not allowed. They get beat down by the U.S. Mafia crowd. CIA, FBI, IMF crew. The world-class multinational wrecking crew. So in the first world, you live like you do, because the so-called third world supporting you. You ask, what is the motive? And what is the reason? Well, to the third